Here we go. Fun. First of all, I just think it's a good idea to keep your adrenaline flowing. So stand up, shake a little, turn around, wiggle, stretch. Okay, we got an hour, and then we're going to eat tasty food. So we'll keep it going. Go ahead and have a seat. I'm going to be watching body mannerisms. So as I'm talking, if somebody's elbowing the person next to them, that'll give me good insight. Okay? So I do think communication is really important, okay? We're going to go through some really good tools for you for your relationship, but also remember you're on an adventure. That's what I got also from your pastor as he's sharing. You join together and you're on this adventure, so give yourself a break, you know? The diversity, the differences that bring you together, you're going to be irritated along the way and also love it. And it's going to keep the spark and keep the fun. So go easy on yourself. We're going to learn tools today, but just remember those battles, the difficulties when you have the exact same argument 20 times, you know, because you get in your cycle of communication. It's okay. Be on this adventure together. So let's dive in and look at some of the myths of communication as we get to some of the good stuff. What I want, though, in the very, very end, I put this up front, so I want you to be thinking about it, is I want you to build for your family a culture of communication. This is going to be important in your relationship. It's also going to come back and be important in your parenting. I was talking with somebody out there earlier just about, you know, the difficulties of kids in our society. If they're in a school system where it may be that they're learning a lot of things that are against what you even believe, it's hard to battle. It's like, how am I raising a child right now? You know, and hearing them and what they're bringing into the home is just tricky. I do think fundamentally, though, if you can figure out how to build a culture of communication, you catch things. They feel comfortable saying it. Even in your relationship, is there a way you guys can communicate honestly so you catch things earlier before it's been years and you look back and you go, whoops, I missed it, you know? Now I'm at the end and I missed it all along. So how can you build a culture of communication? This is what we're going to kind of get to at the end. But first, we're going to go through and kind of look at some of the myths of communication, where we might go wrong on some of our communication styles. So myth number one, truth equals good communication. Now, you might think like, well, what happened? Did we just talk about truth? Truth is powerful. Truth will set you free. The Holy Spirit is called a spirit of truth. I highly value truth, but sometimes that does not equal communication all by itself. And I think you can quickly recognize this in how you might picture a person that tells you they just want to be honest. You know, they just want to tell you the truth. They just want to have good, open communication, freely, honestly, and then they're hurtful. What they share actually brings destruction. There's been many people within the world that have used this concept to harm people in their honest, forthright communication. So just because something is accurate does not mean now's the time to tell someone, okay? So I want you to think about examples, if you can, in your mind as we go through. So try to think of maybe even a personality or a person, so you can kind of picture in your mind what we're learning, that it seems very honest, seems very truthful, and yet it's not necessarily a picture of great communication. What it is sometimes is honesty at the expense of another person, at the expense of maybe in a public setting they're, you know, I'm blanking on the word, but, you know, now they've been ridiculed in public because it's honest, you know. It's honesty, but at the expense of something. Sometimes we are ready to communicate, and we're ready to give truth, but the other person isn't. So no communication actually happens. Just because you're saying truth to somebody doesn't mean communication's happened. Communication is when you give the message and the person receives the message. So sometimes you can be honest all day long and it may not go anywhere because a person's not ready to hear it. So communication has a lot of time and energy built into it, not just saying accurate information to the other person. So pay attention to that. Just because you're communicating doesn't mean that it's the right time. timing is important. Depending on what you're going to share, can you create an environment where it's likely the person will receive the information? How much time and energy are you putting into considering, you know, how you're going to communicate it, where you're going to communicate it? If you have young children and you're working and life's crazy, are you trying to communicate honestly with a person when you're both exhausted and you're done with the day, and if you hear one more thing, you're going to snap, you know? So consider timing in how you communicate. Try to think of examples in your own life where you've thought, okay, I'm going to communicate honestly, and I said it, and why didn't she respond well? Why did he yell and scream at me? What's wrong? I'm just trying to communicate honestly. Well, consider the environment. Consider the factors. Consider their situation building up to that, and try to see if you can connect what I'm saying here. Again, we've said many people have used this concept to harm others. So speaking the truth only is not just the end of communication. Even in Scripture, we have the concept given to us of speaking the truth in love. So now we enter into something beyond just accurate information. Let's consider wisdom now in communication. Let's consider even how Christ communicated when he was on earth. How do you set up the environment so that it's likely they can understand what you're trying to communicate? I think actually counselors use this sometimes too. It's actually really a joke. It's like you have a lot of information as a counselor that could help a person. Technically, you could just say, go do everything I said and everything will be better. You know, sometimes you have this information, you could just tell them, like, actually, stop it. You know, go change this. But it never works. You know, they don't hear anything you're saying if you just come out and say it. Like, just change your life. Go, you know. It's this navigation that you're trying to, as you're communicating, help them see for themselves where they've gone off on a tangent and they need to come back in to something healthy or making a decision in their life. And you have to creatively find a way to help them see it for themselves. I imagine actually it's similar with pastors. Maybe pastors could just say, you know, knock it off, you know. But a lot of times you have to go down this road to help a person see it for themselves. The light bulb comes on. Now they're ready to make a change and to go down the road that they need to for their life to be different. So communication is a lot more to it. And so the wisdom side can be a part of it. If you're trying to communicate something, how can you help them see it for themselves? How can you talk with them in order to see the truth for themselves? So just keep that in the back of your mind. Some of these will build on each other and we'll have examples as we go along. So myth number two, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all. Sounds good, but it's not actually accurate. So here just a moment, because I was debating between this phrase and I also thought about saying something like peace is the highest priority. I think we get trapped in that. Sometimes that's not true. Sometimes peace needs to go out the door. Sometimes you need to say something, even if it's going to cause a problem in the relationship, because it needs to be said. And here's maybe even the opposite of the one we just looked at. All of these will kind of, you have to adjust depending on the circumstance. So sometimes you need to say truth, even though it causes a problem in a relationship. I jump to kind of more severe situations, but it could be in other areas too. But I don't know how many times in families I've seen abuse continued generation after generation after generation. And a lot of that has to do with nobody wanting to say something, nobody wanting to call or to say it out loud. Like, this is crazy. What is happening here? Announce it to the world. Like, this is not right. This should be stopped. What's happening? But nobody feels comfortable bringing it out in the open. Nobody feels comfortable saying something. It's easier sometimes just to keep everything calm, keep the peace, and yes, at the expense of maybe a child or at the expense of somebody else that's not getting help. So it's not just that you have to speak nicely. Sometimes you may be the one that has to stand up when nobody else will and say something and be the enemy. It's interesting. There's a concept that in psychology called the drama triangle. This is actually a fun tangent I'll take for you because I think you could identify somewhere in this. So the drama triangle is a way to view families. And it says, oftentimes, people play a role in their family when they're a kid, and sometimes it sneaks out and they play that role in their relationships as well. So you usually have these roles. You have the rescuer, the perpetrator, and the victim. Okay, so the victim is the role of the person like, oh, poor me, everybody is always trying to get me, and they kind of play that role. The persecutor seems to be the guy everybody blames things on, like it's his fault. Well, he's loud, he's angry, he's mean, you know, maybe even in a family, a kid's a drug addict, and the whole family blames that teen, you know, well, it's his fault, he's ruining our family, he's the bad guy in the family. And then you have the rescuer. Usually the rescuer is the one trying to keep peace, right? So sometimes you have, let's say the, it's just a stereotype, but maybe angry, aggressive dad and the poor kids that are the victims. Now this is a real thing too, obviously, but let's go for it in the roles. And then you have the mom trying to rescue and keep them safe. Well, in communication, you can have something like that too, where you have a person always trying to rescue and keep the peace. Maybe the kid's using drugs, but the mom doesn't want the dad angry, so she's going to hide it and protect and not tell the dad what's happening, try to keep the peace. So what's happening sometimes in trying to keep the peace or trying to rescue is actually lack of truth. Accurate information is not available. You're trying to keep things secret, keep things negotiating. Sometimes it gets complicated, like who's lying where, so that we could just keep everything calm and peaceful, and the information's not getting out, the accurate information's not getting out. Well, in this, basically all three of those roles are based on lies, okay? And we're going to look at communication styles, but these are roles you play in a family. It's not actually good, healthy communication. Good, healthy communication is accurate information is available. You can say truth in a kind and gentle way. You can figure out problems together as a team because you're able to communicate openly and honestly. Kids can communicate honestly with parents. In the relationship, you guys can communicate honestly without somebody being upset or crying over here and without, you know, coming across angry and aggressive. There's just this good, healthy communication, this picture we're going to get to eventually. But we can have roles we play when we're a kid and bring it into our relationship. So sometimes, and we'll look at this later too, sometimes it's like if somebody was honest with us, we go, why are you so mean? You know, why you gotta yell at me? I'm not yelling, I'm just talking. Well, it's just, why you gotta pick on me all the time? That person might accidentally just taken that communication and went into a victim role. Poor me. Okay, I need a rescuer. Now the guy that's trying to communicate turns into the rescuer. Oh, I'm so sorry. You know, calm and help her feel better and rescue her from her feelings. Well, did actually good information ever get out there? Does anybody know what's actually communicating? Or did you kind of play this game in this communication where somebody went into a victim role, somebody rescued, and actually good information never got out there? Communication never actually happened. This happens all the time. We don't even realize it. So in this drama triangle, it's actually interesting because we can look and we see the victim. We see the bad guy, the guy that, you know, is being blamed for everything. And those don't look like roles we want to play. But sometimes we like the rescuer role. The role of keeping peace in the family actually feels good. So it feels like out of these options, that's the role that we will want to take. I want to be the rescuer. But here's the message of the rescuer in a family, the person that wants to keep peace no matter what. The rescuer tells the victim, oh, poor thing, just stay there as a victim. I got this. And you keep the victim stuck in that role. It's not actually a good place to be at all. It's really kind of mean. The victim never gets to the place where they can stand up for themselves and talk and have a voice. And so you just get, oh, just stay right there. You stay the victim. I'll rescue you. And so even though it's out of good motives, actually, I don't think it's out of mean motives at all. It's out of a pattern you learned long ago. We might get into this mode where we're rescuing, keeping peace everywhere, and actually allowing lies to stay, good communications never happening, and people who have never learned to communicate well, we keep them trapped there. Just stay there. I got this. So be careful of that. If you can keep the drama triangle in your mind, you might first think back to childhood. What role did you play in your family? Who was the bad guy? Who was always getting in trouble? Who was always blamed for problems? Who was always a victim, the one that seemed to get picked on, that could be, oh, poor me? It might even truly be a victim, but a lot of times this is more communication. It's not like they're actually being harmed. It's the role they take in their family. And then who's the rescuer? Who was always the person trying to keep peace? Now jump to your current relationship and see if you've accidentally kept a role. If you were playing that role as a kid in your family, that you're doing the same thing here. You're going into a victim mode. Like the person says nothing. They're like, you know, we might accidentally do this. So pay attention. See what kind of roles you had as a kid that transferred into adulthood. But then remember, there's at least two of you, you know. So also, your spouse could be playing a role that they learned from childhood that they're playing out now. So pay attention to that, because a lot of communication could happen, but maybe nothing is actually being communicated. But there's fights and arguments and things, and it has more to do with you going into a natural role you learned a long time ago instead of actually coming fresh to your relationship with good communication. So pay attention to that. Remember the drama triangle. Make sure you're not going into one of those roles. Definitely make sure you're not trying to keep peace at all costs instead of standing up for what's right. And this, I think, very specifically, is I see with kids. So that the parents will keep peace to save face for other family members too and allow something harmful to happen. It is not their motive. I don't actually see parents wanting to do this. It's like a natural force in life that just happens. You'd have to be actively paying attention, see something, and take a chance. Stand up and protect somebody. Say something, even at the expense of peace. Okay? So keep that in the back of your mind. That'll come in with parenting too. Okay, let's see. Authenticity and intimacy. So we might keep peace also just because that's what we're comfortable with. And yet that also may be a lie. So you want to be careful not to confuse peace with passive. A passive personality might just assume, be quiet. You know, like, what do you want to eat? I don't know, it's up to you. What do you want to do? I don't know, it's up to you. Like, they might just try to be neutral and blend into their surroundings just to keep peace for a variety of reasons. Maybe they don't like conflict, you know, maybe that has to do with their childhood, but they'd rather just blend in, keep calm, keep peace. But they're fake. They might really like, you know, some food they're not going to tell you. They might have information that would be great to communicate, but they're not going to do it. They're going to be inauthentic, not out of bad motives, but kind of, it's just what has always been. They're okay with that. They're okay just being neutral. But you don't have an actual relationship happening. You have one person maybe trying to get to know the other person out of the sake of keeping peace or just having lack of conflict, they're not honest. They're not communicating with you. They're just being quiet about it. So be careful that that doesn't happen within a relationship. You want authenticity, realness coming out, and that will create that intimacy, the true honest connection. Okay, let's keep going. Myth number three, the message sent is the message received. So just because you said something doesn't mean communication happened, right? We've talked about this. The information has to be received. I'm going to jump to the bottom because I think this is powerful. The responsibility of getting your message across is on you. It's not just saying something. You have to creatively figure out how are you going to communicate in such a way that your spouse receives the information. So you might have to get to know them. You might have to understand what turns their brain off, okay? So think of men and women and some differences. It's not every man or woman, but there's some broad common differences. One is that women process out loud. Talking out loud about something's very helpful sometimes. Or they're okay with emotions sometimes. So they'll say, like, guys have 2 minutes. You know, like 2 minutes of handling strong emotions and they're done, you know. So I don't know if that's the case for everyone, but, you know, that's a common pattern. So if a woman is going on and very emotional, it's like they lost the person, you know, their spouse a long time ago. You know, no communication's happening. And they might get like PTSD, like, I gotta go, you know, so be careful. So setting up the environment to allow for communication to happen, okay? So once you've communicated, the job's not done. If you want something to be heard, you may have to actually have this be persistent. You may have to have it be continuous, not just I shared and he didn't get it and that I'm done. Or I did communicate it. Remember 2 years ago, I told you this was important to me. I told you once, like, no. It has to be a drumbeat, okay? If you want to communicate something that's really important to you, to your spouse, have it be a drumbeat, something that's continuous. Don't give up. Have it happen on a regular basis. Have patience. This is a part of good communication. This is good communication anywhere. If you wanted to change, you know, your whole work setting and you wanted to adjust something about how they view stuff, drumbeat. Keep it going. Little by little, a message is out there. And then all of a sudden, it catches on and you build momentum and it's something that now could be important to more people. Okay? So this is just good stuff in general for communication. Have a drumbeat. I'm going to give you a little bit of tips on this. Okay? Here's how you get a message across. This is kind of broad, but you could use it specifically in your relationship. One is priming, okay? Priming is creating an environment and information out there that allows somebody to be receptive. So if you wanted to go for Italian tonight, you know, you want to go out, eat Italian, you might mention something about some lasagna that was so cheesy and tasty. You might set a mood. You might... I don't know enough about Italian, like how you would set that environment up, but you just put little hints, little nuggets out there where it's like in their mind. They use this to manipulate people. Don't use it for evil. But, you know, there's something called neuro-linguistic programming. You know, here's an example. You say, you know, there's women out there that are brilliant. They're amazing. They're just so intelligent. And so what I'm doing is I'm saying positive things and touching, like going like this. So your brain starts triggering like positive qualities to me. So there's all these tricks you could do. So don't use it for evil. But you could have things that you're saying throughout the day that's priming, getting them ready for information you want to communicate. So think about it. Think about how down there I have environment and mood. Don't wait till they're absolutely physically exhausted, hungry, tired, and then tell them something. You know, let's eat a good meal. Let's have a relaxing moment, set an environment, some mood, a little comedy. If you can have jokes, humor, something that creates a positive mood, people are more receptive to hear information. So just take some time for some creativity to set the mood for good communication. Also consider personality, okay? If you are married to a person that's not going to sit and talk for an hour, and you already know this, and you should have learned this 5 years ago, don't come expecting again to have an hour-long conversation. Think, how can I communicate in 2 minutes? Now, okay? And then let's wait, and I'll do this again and again and again with some cookies, you know, like... Take some creativity to have a positive environment to where the person's receptive, and the next time more receptive and more receptive to get your message across. So consider personality. Maybe even you might have some statistics. You know, like what if you have a person that loves data and loves statistics? You might have a research study to show them something you're trying to communicate. Think outside the box of how you would communicate. Timing, we talked a little bit about. Know when you're talking to yourself, okay? So think how much communication in the world is happening when the other person has tuned out long ago, okay? So that's reading nonverbal cues, okay? Not everybody is good at this naturally. If you're talking with somebody and they're mentally gone, would you know it? I would get good at this. Learn your spouse and learn to know when their eyes have glazed over and stop, okay? So I have a family member, I won't mention her because it's recorded, but she already knows who she is, that I could be walking out the door waving and leaving and she's still talking. tactic. She has, it's not going to stop. She'll talk to the door. I don't know. So, I mean, there that could be. So I can't worry about everybody in the world, but for you personally, can you look at yourself and learn this skill? Learn to be a good communicator, but part of that is to know when the other person has stopped listening. And then stop. Come back later. Take a break. Come back. Take a break. If you have an urgency that if the person doesn't understand right now, it's not going to work long term. Have some perseverance, okay, in the message you're trying to communicate. Now, I would say one of the reasons why this is really important is because in every relationship, for long-term satisfaction, intimacy, happiness even, all of that, there has to be a place for them to openly communicate their needs and wants. Okay, fundamentally, you want to be able to communicate to the person you love your needs and wants. Doesn't mean you get them, okay? That's a different story, but you want to be able to communicate it. Maybe your needs and wants are not realistic right now, so it may not happen right now. But the intimacy, the honesty, the ability to connect with your other person is that you can communicate your needs and wants and that they can also. And then we'll talk in a moment that you can do that without it being at the expense of something. You don't want to be at the expense of somebody's physical safety. I communicated what I needed and wanted while I beat you. That's not going to work. You know, now it's at the expense of your personal safety. So it's communicating your needs and wants, both to each other, without it being at the expense of something that's not worth losing. So we'll look at that as we go along. But that's what we're trying to get here. So use your creative skills to figure out how to set the environment for good communication. Don't just say something and expect it's going to click forever. Words are the best way to communicate, okay? Sometimes words are very powerful. We know this. I would pay attention to your language. If a mom says to her kids, "I hate you, why did I ever have a kid?" maybe she really loves them and she's just saying the words. That's still going to matter. That's still going to scar them. They're going to have that in their mind for a very long time. So words can also be very powerful, but when you're talking about communication, it's much more than that, right? You can tell if somebody says something, if on their face they've just lied to you, as far as like maybe they have sarcasm or they have a look on their face that you know it's not what they really mean. Our body mannerisms, our facial cues, and our behaviors all communicate loudly. You can say you love a person and treat them terrible. The message coming across is not going to be that they feel loved, okay? So pay attention to everything else. When you learn about sex, we'll talk about foreplay and, again, the same kind of end game of, you know, to enjoy each other eventually needs to be this all-day process of foreplay or communicating love. And again, it's more for women than men, this is important, but actually men too. Just think about the needs of men and women, and men oftentimes to feel important, that they've got your attention. Also for women though too, that they can you are captured by them, you know, that kind of a thing. So throughout the whole day you're communicating for something later. Same thing with other communication. How are you communicating love in your behaviors? How are you communicating that their time is important? Even just being here, some of you know that my husband has my kids and they're out having fun. And I was talking with somebody because I used to travel more, and at some point my husband's like, "It's too much." It's like, I understand that God has gifted you, but then all the weight goes on me for that time with the kids, and it's hard. And in that communication, I could say a lot of things to him, but it didn't matter. I have to stay home sometimes, that I have to choose to prioritize, like you're talking about, my family and what matters to him. I could talk all day long. It had to be an action. So that's an important part, is pay attention to what you're saying, but more importantly sometimes, what are you communicating through what you decide to do or not do throughout the day? So behaviors, facial cues, body mannerisms. I'm going to talk more about this when we talk about the four horsemen of the apocalypse in just a moment. Okay, so these are identified. I put Gottman down there, but I don't think you can see it. But the Gottman Marriage Clinic, again, it's a ton of research on couples. And all they're looking for is broad themes of what helped couples last, a long time or when marriages ended quickly. And so they're looking at broad patterns. So this is what they've identified as what will just really destroy a relationship. Now, what's funny is you're probably going to recognize some of these. So we have these patterns in us a lot of times, how we respond to communication. So first one is criticism. Criticism is attacking the whole person. So if you start a conversation with, you always, dot, 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 or you never, dot, 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 you're already in a bad place. Okay? So for a couple of reasons. One, in all their research, one thing they noticed is that a startup is what they call it, is really important. So you're doing your day, here you come, you're getting ready to communicate. How does the communication start? That matters. So if you start a communication with you, it's a negative startup. Because what happens when somebody points their finger and starts screaming at you? You always or you never. What does that do inside you? It creates fight back, right? A defense. Like, nah, I didn't. You always, you know, you already get in a defensive state. So it starts the communication negatively, and then you can imagine where that's going to go. So what they said is figure out how to improve your startups. When you start the communication, how can it start positive? You may even have to go on tangents, and you may be, you can fight, you can have conflict. Other things are going to happen in a relationship. But a little twist in a change you might make is think about the startup. How can you have a better startup? Initiating the communication. So how you would switch this is instead of starting with you, start with I. Now this is some of the silly fluffy psychology stuff because you get I statements and it can sound really dorky sometimes. But it does change communication styles. If you start with I, it's less of an attack. If you start with you, the person's going to almost always be defensive. Nuh-uh, they're going to fight back. If you say, I'm struggling because when you do this, I feel this and I go through this and it's scary and I get very insecure. Now that style, the other person, they might want to work on fixing that. They're not going to be like, nuh-uh, like how does that work? All I'm doing is sharing how I feel. How are you going to argue with how I feel? If you can come from that place of just describing what you're going through, it's hardly ever the other person's going to feel like attacking then. Okay? They're going to have compassion, most likely. They're going to, even if they disagree, they're not going to want you to feel like that. They're going to have compassion for how you feel. And that's a key twist, even on the other side. Even if you disagree with the person, can you have compassion for how they feel? If they feel scared, but there's nothing to be scared of, I will take care of you. You know, like, yes, you know, but if they feel scared or overwhelmed, why do you feel overwhelmed? That's ridiculous. You have a very good life. Knock it off. Well, where's the compassion? Can you empathize with how they feel? Then you can figure out the rest. But start there by validating feelings. I'm so sorry you feel so overwhelmed. Now keep communicating. So two sides of that. One side has to do with if you can start up with focusing on yourself and what you're going through instead of attacking the other person, you're going to be better off. And also, can you validate feelings? Stay away from the content right away. You're going to have to get to it. But first say, man, I really am sorry you're feeling like this. Now let's dive into the conflict. Then you have a better startup, and that's more likely good communication will follow. Okay, so criticism. Next is contempt. This is probably one of the worst. Actually, statistically, it could really destroy a relationship fast. This is when a person really does believe they're better than you. And you could hear it in their tone of voice. A lot of times it's actually on their face, a look, how they talk to the person. I hope this is nobody here, but I also am not going to presume. So let the Holy Spirit talk to you if it is somebody here. But otherwise, I hope you pay attention for the sake of other people. If you watch this, you can see it. The person has contempt. it usually will ruffle up. You'll be upset if you watch it, like, wow, how could you talk to her in front of somebody like that? How can you demean him in front of people? That's awful. But that happens in communication, where you are a righteous kind of sense about you, and you push the other person down to build yourself up. That can really destroy a relationship. So it could be cynicism, it could be name-calling, it could be mockery. And I just like that it may be in words, it may be in your face, like, what's wrong with you, idiot? You know, you can have a facial expression that just puts that other person down. They feel like an idiot, they're sitting there embarrassed, what are they gonna do? That is one of the worst as far as leading to divorce eventually. Now, it's research, so you can make research do anything. These are broad patterns. There's people that have lived with a contemptive person for a very long time in marriage. So it may not end, but it's going to be harmful. So how you would flip this, how you would get out of this, the person that has contempt needs to figure out how to appreciate the strengths of their spouse and how to be grateful. And this, actually, I believe gratefulness is how you get out of being prideful, okay? So that could match this. If a person can look at what they value and have and are grateful for in life, that gets them out of their selfish kind of pride, egocentric self. So this will work for contempt. Now, if you're the spouse of a person that's contemptuous, you're going to have to go to all your creative skills to figure out how to confront them. Okay, so that's going to be hard. But if you believe you're the contempt person, then that's where you need to start, is go to God, make sure that you have humbled yourself before God, have appreciation, find the strengths, go back and remember what you fell in love with, and keep close ties to what you love about the person, their strengths, the good, and be grateful instead of focusing on what bugs you. Okay, next one, defensiveness. This is righteous indignation or innocent victimhood. This is usually the response of being attacked. So somebody points their finger and says, you always, you're going, nah, I don't. I have. What? Okay, let's say this is not personal, except for it is, because apparently I can never remember to stop at the grocery store and get what I've been asked to get. I have a disorder. So when this happens, my husband may or may not say, you never, now he just gives up. He's like, I already know you forgot. I sent somebody else because I knew you would. But there could be an attack, like, you never remember, blah, blah, blah. That could be accurate information. But the other person may be elicited to say, yes, I do. Or, yeah, but it's because I've had such a long day and this and this and this, and how am I supposed to ever remember? Why are you yelling at me? I work so hard all day long, and I forgot the lettuce, but any person would have done such a thing because of how busy my life is. So you could go into the spiral of now you're crying, and it's focused on poor me, that you would have wanted me to get lettuce on such a day as this. Okay? So you can see where this could go. It's like, yeah, but did you forget the lettuce? Yes. So why don't you take responsibility? And that's how you get out of this trap. Okay? Even if you're attacked. Okay? Even if they haven't learned good communication yet, so they just come out and yell at you, calm down. Take a deep breath. Can you take responsibility for something? Do it, because guess what? It will diffuse that argument. So even if they do a poor job and they start screaming, you always ever, blah, 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 and you take a deep breath and you go, you're right, I forgot it, I apologize. Now what happens? Even if they're angry, they're like, okay, thank you. You know, it can diffuse it instead of going back and forth and then spiraling on and on, okay? So if you have an inclination to kind of fight back, don't. Take a deep breath. Figure out what, even if there's 10 things they're mad at you for, can you identify one thing you can take responsibility for? Do it. See what happens. See how it turns the communication, how it turns the argument. Take responsibility. Stonewalling is fourth. This is when you completely withdraw. Okay? You shut down. Maybe you leave. You physically leave. You've had enough. You're gone. You're going to go somewhere else and come back later. That's possible. Or everything about you has shut off. The person keeps talking and you have nothing. You're not engaging in facial cues. You're not engaging in communication. You have mentally left the conversation. The person could keep going. It doesn't matter. You're out. You've had enough. You're done. No communication is happening at that point. This is a common pattern, but a lot of times it's also a reaction. For whatever case, it's too much. It's too much, so the person stonewalls. Instead of saying, please stop, this is too much, can we come back to it? Instead of communicating, they just shut off, and they figure that's the best. I'll be somewhere else, and I'll come back later. So with stonewalling, though, it's negative for a relationship. So how you would fix this or get better at this is take breaks. So it could be that the person communicating already knows ahead of time, he or she, because it could be reverse. It's just you have stereotypes that are based in reality. But you could also have the flip. So you need to know yourself and the couples that you're dealing with and yourself and your spouse. But if you already know, when I talk too much, it's too much for the other person, then figure out how to have breaks. Give a little, take a break, go do something else, come back, continue the conversation, take a break, go do it, come back. Take breaks so it doesn't become so overwhelming the other person shuts down. If you're the person that shuts down, have insight on yourself and say, I'm sorry, I love you, but it's too much for me. Can we come back to this? Can we take a break and come back to this? And try communicating also if it is too much before you shut down. Okay, so these are the four horsemen of communication, and I wanted to tie in something I said before, see if I can remember. Criticism, contempt. I think I was thinking of basically communication is also body mannerisms and everything else, and I was thinking of the contempt, how you can have a face that just shuts that person down and really hurts them and their self-worth. It's deep, so be careful with that. Okay, myth number four. If he or she loved me, she would already know this, okay? Now, we know this myth. We believe this. People joke about it, but sometimes it continues in relationships, so be careful. There is no such thing as a mind reader, okay? Not that I found maybe something off on some deep tangent, but not in general, okay? So your spouse cannot read your mind, even if they really, really loved you. They're not going to guess what you need and want. First of all, most couples have a lot of differences. A lot of times their personalities are very different. Sometimes their families are very different in their upbringing. Sometimes there's just, you know, key differences just because of gender differences. So what comes natural that we think everybody should know, they had never thought of ever. Okay, so we think it's obvious. We think that they should have known our favorite color by now, or that they should have figured out that we love this. And they should have known that I love this, and they've never incorporated it, so they obviously don't love me. It's just not true. They probably never thought of it. So to communicate honestly, we have to realize whatever we want them to know, we have to tell them. And not just say it in words, but actually create an environment where they're going to understand what we want to communicate. So we are different. We communicate differently. We have different backgrounds and create communication barriers. One I thought on this is somebody might have been raised actually in a violent home. So yelling and screaming was just kind of common. You know, it's just not even a big deal. And another person had the quietest, peacefulest home ever as a child. If you bring those two together, this one's kind of raising their voice, and this one's crying and feeling abused. You know, like, it's like, oh, why are you yelling at me? It's like, I haven't yelled at all. What are you talking about? So you could have this kind of mismatched communication because they're coming from different backgrounds. And so we are presuming, you know, that they should know and they should understand, but they have a completely different context they're coming from. So getting to know each other's communication styles, what comes from the different backgrounds, is really important. Communicating anything we need and want to the other person, making sure they understand it, that's our end goal. It doesn't mean we're going to get it, but we want the communication lines open so that 17 years later, you know, 18 years later, 25 years later, you don't go, you missed it. You know, this whole time, this is what I was looking for, and I'm done. I haven't got it. I'm out. Well, what happened in 25 years? You could have communicated that. Let's get it out now. Let's be honest now in a way that it's receptive, not where it's fire hose. You know, I'm going to tell you don't leave here tonight. You know, actually, well, this is what I want in this area and this way. You know, take your time, plan it out. But if it's something that's, for example, a core need, I hope that other person knows it, because those kind of core needs, what you really desire in a good way, not in a terrible way, but if you think of the book His Needs, Her Needs, it kind of goes through sex, it goes through emotional connection, it goes through communication, like talking with each other, doing activities together, having fun together. It talks about these common needs in relationships. And within that, if you had that need and your spouse was not meeting it, it would be like a hole, a craving. That's too risky. You don't want a desire deep down craving. You could just minimize and say, well, knock it off. Well, you're selfish. You shouldn't need sex. Calm down. It's fine. We'll go months and months and figure it out, you know? Well, okay, that's not going to work. You know, if that person has that core need, it's going to stay there. And who else out there is all ready and willing to meet the needs of your spouse? This is a war. Be aware. So for yourself, if you have a deep core need, I hope you're communicating it with your spouse. Because you are communicating it, it'll be kind of seeping out everywhere. Okay? So be careful. Also, create the environment where your spouse can share with you their needs and take them serious. If you don't take them serious, someone will. Fight for your relationship, pay attention, and take those communications. Okay, I want to take a quick moment to actually understand good communication. I saved it at the end. I wanted to do the myths, but I want to come in and just kind of give you something. Instead of exploring what we think of communication, I want to actually tell you how to have really good communication. So we see four common patterns in how people communicate: passive, aggressive, passive-aggressive, and assertive. What we're going to go for is assertive, and I'll teach you a trick, okay? Teach you a trick on assertive. But first of all, passive. Passive is a person that does not communicate, okay? They're not going to tell you what they're thinking, what they want, what they need. They're not going to. They're going to just be neutral and not communicate. This could be from childhood, this could be from culture or family or whatever else, but they're just not actually going to communicate. You might be called a doormat in this role, and it might not even seem like it's a problem if you're married to a good person, because they might not take advantage of you. But you're still not actually communicating or telling that person anything about who you really are inside. You're not communicating. So passive is on one extreme. Aggressive is on the other. Aggressive, you're going to communicate everything you want to, okay? You're going to communicate your needs and wants at the expense of other people, at the expense of their feelings, of their physical safety. You're going to, whether it's yelling, demeaning, physically aggressive, you're going to tell people your truth at the expense of their well-being, okay? That's on the whole other extreme. But passive-aggressive may be where we lie mostly, and this is the fantastic creative one. So on the front, you're going to look like you're very honest, and you're going to sneak in attacks everywhere else. So on your face, oh, yeah, no problem. I don't mind at all if you go have fun. I'll just be here lonely and bored. It's okay. I actually like being miserable sometimes, so it's fine. Go, please, yes. So we are going to look like everything's fine. Yeah, no problem. And we're going to sneak in attacks everywhere. We might use guilt. We might use, you know, physical things somewhere hiding that's going to surprise. Well, I was going to do it, but I couldn't because you made me do this. So now I can't. Sorry. You know, so passive aggressive. So here's the key difference. And this is how you're going to tie in actual good communication, assertive communication. Assertive communication is the truth with nothing added. Communicating what you want to communicate with no hidden attacks, no hidden agenda. So if you wanted to say something honest to a person, and maybe it was emotional or uncomfortable or anything else, this is your trick. Think in your mind, what is the truth I want to communicate? How can I get it as short as possible? One sentence. Say that sentence and nothing else. If you start adding, you're probably going on some passive-aggressive tangent. Just say the truth and stop. Now, you can use this in many areas. I've used it in settings where it's very difficult, maybe like work environment or anything else, and I've given it to clients to use and kind of drama, passive-aggressive families where they're going to guilt you from everywhere. And I say, okay, just focus in. Get your grounding. Say the truth. The other person is going to attack you from every which way. They're not used to assertive communication. So they're going to say, what about this, and guilt you here, and yell at this, and well, and they're going to go on some tangent that has nothing to do with the communication just to break you. So all over the place, and you say that sentence one more time. Say that sentence again. They go over here. They attack you here. Come back. Say that sentence. They go over here. They're using this. Come back. Say that sentence. That's it. Come back. Say that sentence. This is powerful. I had the time I learned this, I'll go quick here, but I want you to have it fresh in your mind to use. There was a lady that was not doing her job. I knew because she would work and then I would come right after her. So I always knew she didn't do anything because I did it all when she got there. But she started telling everybody that it was other people and she was making up lies. I knew it because it was obvious to me. One day she attacked me in front of a bunch of people. So I just waited. I remember thinking, and this particular skill my husband taught me, we prepped. I was not born assertive. Okay, I am very good at being passive aggressive. So I've learned along the way. So he gave me this. Just, what's your phrase? My phrase was, you lied. I know you did. Don't lie about me again. Something like that. Something simple. It's like, I know you lied. So I was ready. She's very aggressive. She's powerful in many ways. And here we are alone. And I said, I need to tell you something. I know you lied. Don't lie about me again. Something like that. She starts attacking. Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, I know. But I know you lied. Please don't do that again. Blah, 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 blah. I kept coming back. At the end, she goes, wow. I never thought you would be the one to stand up against me. She backed down. She knew. And I'm like, you know, I went, oh, my God, I did it! And I never went back. I mean, assertiveness is powerful. And the reason why it's powerful is because it's truth. Truth is a great place to be in. No hidden motives, no alternative, you know, plans up your sleeves. Get out of it. In your relationship, stay in truth. So keep it simple, keep it short, say the truth, and that's it. Don't add anything else to it, and you'll be in a good place. Last, I want you to come now and picture a tangible example of what it would look like to have a culture of communication in your family, that everybody in your family feels very comfortable communicating their needs and wants in a safe place. They know they can do that. People can share their needs and wants freely. Not everyone has to accept or do something about your needs and wants. You can have a need and want, and it might not get met today. And that has to be okay. It's about communicating it. Maybe it's in a year from now. Now we know it's important to you, and we'll have a goal, and we'll work toward it, but it might not be immediate. So it doesn't mean you get everything you need and want, okay? It just means now you have the communication so you can work toward it. Also, specific times and the environment are set for communicating difficult topics. You can have a family communication day, you know, where it's like free for all, let's talk. Let's open up. Anything you guys been worried about, thinking about, keep that communication open. I remember my mom, she had 5 children. There's 5 of us. And she would always say later, she's like, I don't know why, but teens always talk at midnight. You got to be ready. They always talk at midnight around food. Okay, so who knows the environment you need to set up, but you've got to plan for it. Set it up to where everybody, you can have that open communication. Boundaries and roles are still intact with good communication. You don't have to give up your role as a mom or a dad to have good communication with your kid. You can still have rules. You can still have boundaries. What's acceptable, what's not acceptable. All that can still be in place with the ability to freely, openly communicate. And that's actually safe. If you let go of some of your boundaries, it will be uncomfortable for a kid to share, actually. They need the boundaries. The relationship is secure during communication. You don't want to have a risk that if this doesn't go well, we're getting a divorce. I'm leaving. You know, any kind of threats, any kind of, even with kids, you want it very clear. You love them and you're here forever. I remember one couple, he was so insecure because of his whole past. But the wife, when they were going off and he was all over the place, she goes, "You keep acting like that you could do something where I would leave you." She said, "I don't have a plan B. I'm staying." So he was an addict. So she's like, "So I really hope you figure out how to pull it together, because I'm not going anywhere. I will be here no matter what. So please try to get help and stop using that as an excuse, because I'm not leaving." And, you know, it was true. He was worried she was going to leave, but bottom line is she wasn't. And so he didn't have that anymore. He had to come back because she was not leaving. He had no excuse. So create that environment. The relationship's not at risk. Be flexible and adjust when needed. If there's one skill I hope you can figure out how to get, if you want a family, a relationship, parenting, all of it, flexibility, adaptability. At any moment, you might have to just change something if you like it organized and in a row. And that's me. I just want a checklist. I could work really hard at perfecting whatever's on the list. It doesn't matter. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, it's going to change. So figuring out how to be flexible, letting something go. You don't have to win every time. Why don't you give in this time for the good altogether? Let it go. Come back again. It's not all or nothing right now. You got a long time. You have 17 years. You have maybe 30 years, 50 years. Who knows? Calm down, you know? Be flexible. Don't think now's the time. You have to stand your ground forever. You got a long time. Let one go for the next time. Come back in later. It doesn't have to be today. Tomorrow, come back in and try to communicate. It didn't work this time. Be flexible, adjust when needed. Okay, and we're good. Woo, good timing. So that's it. Thank you very much. I hope you take that with you. You're a great audience, just so you know. I love the interaction, and it's been really fun with your body mannerisms honing in, and I appreciate that. So thank you. Thank you very much.